Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Cindy, continuing to read from the Odessa American for Saturday, September 17th. John Edward Southard, 77, of Odessa, passed away Wednesday, September 14th, in Midland. He was born December 30th, 1944, in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, to the late Dorothy Krager and Ross Southard. He is survived by his son, Brian Keith Middlebrook, and wife, Julie, of Midland, daughter, Heather Richardson, and husband, Sean, of Mustang, Oklahoma, brother, Chris Southard, and wife, Wanda, of Tulsa, Oklahoma, sister Peggy Southard of Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, and five grandchildren. He is preceded in death by his wife, Carolyn Southard, and his parents, Ross and Dorothy Southard. The family received friends for visitation Saturday, September 17th, at Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home. The funeral services were held Sunday, September 18th, with Pastor Harry Irwin officiating. Burial was held privately by the family at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Gwenda Joyce Aldridge, 74, of Odessa, died Monday, September 12th, in Lubbock. Funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. on Monday, September 19th, at Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Arrangements are by Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home of Odessa. Horacio Pando Aranda, 83, of Odessa, died Monday, September 12th, in Odessa. Mass will be celebrated at 10 a.m. Monday, September 19th, at St. Mary's Catholic Church. Rosary was recited Sunday. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Lillian Marceline Bell, 92, of Odessa, died Tuesday, September 6th, in Odessa. Memorial service will be held at 10 a.m. Monday, September 19th, at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Noble Dwayne Talley, 75, of Odessa, died Wednesday, September 14th, in Odessa. Funeral service will be held at 1 p.m. September 21st at Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Mike McGuire is officiating. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Danny Edwin Galley, 66, of Odessa, died Wednesday, September 14th, in Odessa. Funeral service was held on September 17th at Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. David Whitaker officiated. Arrangements were by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Arthur Noah Hales, Jr., 89, of Goldsmith, died Tuesday, September 13th, in Midland. Celebration of life was held Saturday, September 17th, at Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home. Jimmy Braswell officiated. Arrangements are by Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home of Odessa.
Hello, friends. This is Julie, reading from the Odessa American, Sunday, September 18th. Gear up for electric trucks. Development of battery-powered trucks requires more natural gas, by Bob Campbell. They're running a ways behind electrically powered cars and pickups, but electric trucks are already on the market, and industry observers are saying it won't be long till they become a significant part of America's truck traffic. Waco economist Ray Perryman and Odessa Trucking Company executive Mike Wall says electrically powered trucks are coming, but is a complex scenario. Perryman said Freightliner is marketing an 18-wheeler and a smaller box truck, and other manufacturers like Tesla are promising to join the action soon. Battery technology is advancing, and with it, range and cost efficiency, Perryman said. In fact, we work with a firm developing a zero-emissions technology more than a decade ago that is about to launch. Having said that, some of the material needed to produce high-capacity batteries are difficult to obtain in large quantities, and dispose remains a significant obstacle. Freightliner is touting its 470-horsepower, 82,000-pound, Escadia truck, and the smaller EM2, each of which offers a range of 230 miles and an 80% recharge in 90 minutes. Depending how it's configured, and the Cascadian goes for two or three times the price of Freightliner's regular 139,000 diesel-powered Cascadia, and the medium deputy EM2 runs 400,000. Perriman said a trucker or a trucking company view buying trucks for an 18-wheeler rig differently than a person shopping for a car or a pickup because operational costs must be considered. For a logistics firm, until 18-wheelers can be purchased and operated at costs comparable to diesel-powered trucks, it would be difficult to justify purchases for the mainstream buyer operating a significant fleet, he said. It will also require the necessity-supporting infrastructure. While electric vehicles are increasingly common, the challenges with taking them on the road trips are widely documented. For logistic firms, until it becomes clear that charging or having to wait for chargers to become available won't cause excessive or expensive delays, widespread deployment will be curtailed. However, Perriman said advancing technologies will help achieve cost parity. In the next few years, it will accelerate the deployment of big battery-powered trucks. I should point out that much of the future incremental electricity demands will be met by natural gas facilities, like with carbon capture, as costs continue to decline, he said. The conversion factor from natural gas BTUs to electricity is roughly 45%. Thus, the emergence of electric trucks as a larger part of the market will likely stimulate the demand for natural gas. We modeled this phenomenon a while back under several scenarios and found it to be beneficial to the oil and gas industry. Wall, operating manager at Trans-Pecos Trucking, said electric trucks pose questions like what it would cost to get a mechanic to come fix a breakdown on the road. Wall said replacing the battery in an electric car every 4 or 5 years costs $40,000, and replacing much bigger ones in trucks would cost even more. I see lots of problems because it's a big unknown, but I guess I see where it would work well, he said. There is a sure big push to go electric. Back when people were moving things with horses and wagons, some thought the combustion engine would never catch on. But with the freight rates we have these days, we could pay for something like that. Wall said making long haul to places like Missouri and North Dakota would necessitate recharging much more frequently than refueling with diesel. Local news brief. Midland man charged with manslaughter. On September 16th at approximately 5:20 p.m., the Midland Police Department responded to Midland Memorial Hospital in reference to a gunshot victim. Upon arrival, officers made contact with Arturo Barraza, 21, from Midland, and identified him as a person who transported the victim to the hospital. The victim, 19-year-old Estella W. Moreno from Midland, sustained a gunshot wound and was later pronounced deceased at the hospital, a news release said. The Crimes Against Persons Unit at the Midland Police Department Crime Scene Unit were notified and responded to the hospital, and the release said. Barraza was transported to the Midland Police Department for questioning and was later transported to Midland County Jail and charged with manslaughter. The release said the next of kin has been notified. The investigation is ongoing. Odessa man faces assault charges. The Odessa man is facing an aggravated assault with a deadly weapon charge after a 16-year-old boy accused him of being so severely with a shotgun that it broke the butt of the gun. According to the Odessa Police Department report, a woman called the police department on June 5th after the boy came to visit her for the summer and she noticed he was malnourished and had several scars on his face. The woman told police the teenager told her he was being physically abused by John Adams Marcantel, 39, numerous times the month prior. The teen told a forensic interviewer a drunken Marcantel would beat him often and constantly hit him in the head. According to the report, the boy said on one occasion Marcantel ordered him to open his mouth so he could put the barrel of a shotgun inside it when he refused. Marcantel struck him with the butt of the gun above his right eye, lacerating the skin and leaving a scar. The boy claimed Marcantel continued to hit his arm, chest, and right knee with the gun, causing the butt of the gunshot to break, the report stated. Doctors found numerous scars on the boy's face and head consistent with the story, according to the report. During a search at Marcantel's apartment on Dorado Drive on Wednesday, officers found a shotgun with a broken butt, the report stated. Marcantel was booked into the Ector County Jail Wednesday and released Thursday after posting a $40,000 surety bond. Aggravated assault with a deadly weapon is a Class 2 felony, punishable by a prison sentence of 2 to 20 years. Woman accused of spitting on cop. An Odessa woman who was arrested on a misdemeanor DWI charge is now facing a felony charge, too, after police said she repeatedly spit on her arrest officer and tried to spit on others. According to the Odessa Police Department report, an investigator with the Ector County Medical Examiner's Office happened upon a Dodge Charger with a heavy front-end damage parked on the south side of the 4100 block of East 42nd Street around 2 a.m. Friday. He called authorities. The driver of the car, Yanez Palomino Martinez, 24, had red glassy eyes and smelled like alcohol when officers arrived. And she wasn't making sense when spoken to, the report stated. While speaking with the officers, Martinez became belligerent and argumentative and flashing her breast at them, according to the report. The officer who arrested Martinez wrote in her report that after she placed Martinez in her car, Martinez spit on her multiple times and tried to spit on the other officers. Another officer reported he saw Martinez spitting and noticing she also blew air out of her nose, causing mucus to eject from her nose, attempting to blow it toward the arresting officer. Martinez was arrested on suspicion of driving while intoxicated and harassment of a public servant, a felony 3 punishable by 2 to 10 years in prison. Martinez remained in the Ector County Jail on Friday afternoon on surety bonds totaling $10,500. DPS investigating trooper's wreck. The Texas Department of Public Safety is investigating a non-injury crash involving a trooper Thursday night. According to DPS, a marked DPS Chevrolet Tahoe patrol unit and a Chevrolet Silverado collided around 9 p.m. in the intersection of North Grandview and East 8th Street. Woman sentenced to deferred probation. An Odessa woman was arrested in April after her husband told police she tried to set him on fire and was placed on 5 years deferred probation Friday in order to pay a $1,000 fine. If Sherite Verone Cooper Bolin successfully completes probation, the aggravated assault with a deadly weapons charge filed against her will be dismissed. According to Odessa Police Department report, officers received a disturbance call around 5:30 p.m. April 29th. When officers arrived at the home in the 5200 block of Clinton Avenue, a man told officers that Cooper Baldwin, his wife of 14 years, attempted to light him on fire by throwing matches at him and placing a lit match on his skin. The man said he knocked the matches out of her hands, but she grabbed the kitchen knife and pointed it at him, threatening manner. According to the report, he told the officers he grabbed the knife from her cutting his hand in the process, but she grabbed a second one. At this point, the husband claimed to have defended himself, the report said. According to the report, officers observed a visible burn marks on the husband's forearm, a small cut on the inside of his right hand, and multiple burned and unburned matchsticks on the floor. Cooper Bolin admitted to throwing lit matches at her husband, the report said. She was booked into the Ector County Jail on suspicion of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, family violence. She entered a plea agreement Friday and was sentenced by Judge James Rush of the 244th Ector County District Court. Death notices. Horacio Pando Armanda, 83, of Odessa, died Monday, September 12, 2022, in Odessa. Mass will be celebrated at 10 a.m. Monday, September 19th, at St. Mary's Catholic Church. Rosary will be cited Sunday, September 19th at 7 p.m. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Billy Jean O'Shield, 89, of Odessa, died Wednesday, September 14th in Odessa. Graveside services is scheduled for 3 p.m. September 19th at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Reverend Dr. Jimmy Braswell is officiating. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Betty Jo Pierce, 89, died Friday, September 16th in San Antonio. Services are pending with Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Death notices. Odessa. Donald Lloyd Sonny Clark, 93, of Odessa, died Friday, September 9th in Odessa. Graveside services is scheduled for 2 p.m. September 12th. At Sunset Memorial Gardens, Jody Casper is officiating. Arrangements by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Odessa. Jake Cantrell Collins, Jr., 91, of Odessa, died Wednesday, September 7th, in Odessa. Memorial service is scheduled for 10 a.m., September 24th, at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Pastor Glenn Anderson is officiating. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Denison. Olympia Ibera Lujan, 77, of Odessa, died Sunday, September 7th, in Denison, Texas. Mass will be celebrated at 1 p.m. Monday, September 12th, at St. Joseph's Catholic Church in Odessa. Burial followed at Rose Hill Gardens section of Ector County Cemetery. Father Frank Chavez is officiating. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Monday, September 19th. Math class looks to move pupils. Grant to introduce kids to real-world data collection. The story was written by Ruth Campbell. One of the largest grants awarded by the Education Foundation this year went to Permian High School Math Department Chair Patrick Mosley for Walk the Graph and Moving Cones. The two grants total more than $21,000. Walk the Graph was for $17,520, and Moving Cones was for $4,100. He's getting 150 CBR2s, or 10 classroom sets, and he asked for 20 TI Innovation Rovers. The CBR2s are data collection devices. Walk the Graph includes CBR2s, which attach to Inspire calculators. It's a motion sensor that can tell how far an object is away from it and gives you information in velocity and time information, quote, just a whole slew of little bits of information that the calculator can collect, Mosley said. You can then analyze that data, but this particular grant I wrote, I preset basically a graph into the calculator connected to the CBR unit to the calculator. The student will have to move their entire body to follow that graph almost in real time, Mosley said. This is meant to help students grasp and solidify some basic algebra concepts, he said. Quote, this is actually a pretty common device. As I said, it's a sound sensor. They actually use these out in the field as they're trying to take measurements between different objects. It's a good tool to use. There's different varieties of them, but this one's real simplistic. I know there's a lot more complicated ones out there, Mosley said. It's very similar to radar that police officers used for speed traps and stuff like that, end quote. His second grant is called Moving Cones, quote, and that's where this rover comes into play. Basically, what it does is I have some big charts with grids on it, and I'll set it up so it looks like a big gridded chart that looks like a coordinate plan the students can use. There will be some spots on it where they'll navigate the rovers through those spots, and ultimately, they have to use the rover to push the cone into a specific location, Mosley said. He added that later on, as students get more involved with it, they can then start writing their own programs that will control the rover. Quote, you can actually set up a track with different colored lines, and they'll actually follow that with the right program. It's pretty neat. There's a variety of activities that go along with this one, Mosley said. Math isn't always hands-on like physics or other sciences. Students have to wrap their brains around it. Quote, but these devices help get students out of their seats, get them moving, and they start feeling how the stuff works, and they start saying, oh, the slope is this because of these different things that can happen. Yeah, time, and they sort of see how time and distance really influence how things behave, Mosley said. Mosley said he went through some training with Texas Instruments that included training on CBRs and the rovers. Quote, I've used the CBRs before, but it's been a long time. And I actually scout around the high school and a couple other schools and see if they had any, and I couldn't find any. So I said, well, I guess I better write a grant for it. Our previous department head, I was wanting to just get a classroom set of these, and she actually convinced me to get my 10 classroom set of them, so that's why that grant is pretty big, Mosley said. He said he was astonished when he found out he got the grants. Other teachers will be able to use them as well, and he's certain it will help capture the students' attention. Quote, absolutely, I think that's a big thing, Mosley said. He added that other teachers should try for Education Foundation grants. This is his second award in 6 years. Quote, they're only limited by their own imaginations, Mosley said. Mosley said he was successful in getting an Education Foundation grant about 6 years ago. Permian principal Delisa Stiles said they were thrilled to find out about Mosley's award. Quote, when we learned that Mr. Mosley had been awarded 2 grants from ECISD's Education Foundation, we were elated. It says a lot about his leadership and innovative, outside-the-box thinking. It takes time to write and submit a thoughtful proposal that not only grabs the attention of the committee, but also creatively serves the academic needs of our students. Mr. Mosley has recently stepped into the role of Permian's Math Department Chair, and we are honored to have him serving in such a vital position, Stiles said in an email. Mosley added that it's not hard to write a grant, but it may take time to get the signatures you need. He added that his training sparked his imagination. Quote, as a matter of fact, there's more stuff I'm planning on writing grants for this year. There are some kits that go with, these are called the Innovator Hubs. It's actually kind of the brain inside of this, he said. What the student would have to do is build spreadsheets and different stuff. It kind of allows them to play with that stuff, Mosley added. Coding will factor into the devices, he said, especially with the rover. Quote, with the rover, it could lead into more coding, which is pretty big STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math push right now. The CBR is not really codable. It's not a coding thing. It's just recording data. There's a data collecting tool in the built-in on the calculators that allows you to click all kinds of data. And actually, not just with the CBRs, there's actually all kinds of different data collecting tools out there, temperature, chemical. Again, there's tons of scientific data collection tools out there, Mosley said. Born in El Paso, Mosley said his father was in the military, so they moved around a lot. He lived in Germany for a few years, and after his dad got out of the service, they moved to Odessa, which is where his father was born. Mosley went to Odessa High School, earned an associate degree in sociology from Odessa College, and a bachelor's degree in mathematics from University of Texas Permian Basin. He earned a master's in education technology from UT Rio Grande Valley. Mosley didn't think he was going to teach, but one of the security officers, Randall Jones, talked him into subbing, and he was hooked from there. He has been teaching for more than 18 years. Quote, I was pretty good at math. I did really well in high school and didn't really apply myself that much, just kind of did what I needed to do in order to get done. College was a lot more fun. Math there is a lot better. I enjoyed a lot better, especially after I figured out what's going on, Mosley said.
Enlarged pelvic veins are not a cause for concern. To your good health for Saturday. Dear Dr. Roach, I'm a 71-year-old female with no children, but I did have an ectopic pregnancy at age 43. Other than that, I have had no female issues. I was getting a CT scan to my spleen area when it was discovered I had enlarged pelvic veins in my groin. I don't have pelvic pain, nor do I have pain with sex, so the only symptoms I have, which may or may not be related, are bloating and some constipation. I've seen a vascular surgeon and a urogynecologist to ask about this question and if I need treatment for it. Both were rather vague, saying if I'm not experiencing pain, I should just get it imaged every year. Is that sound advice? Can the veins twist and cause blockage? Can they cause a blood clot? I can't really get any info on it. Dr. Roach writes, although advanced imaging like CT and MRI scans have led physicians to be able to make more precise diagnosis than before, there is an issue of what to do with incidental findings. Many people have written to me about small tumors, which are far more common than we thought, but enlarged pelvic veins are another example of an incidental finding. Some women do have a condition called pelvic congestion syndrome, which is a cause of pelvic pain that is worsened by prolonged standing or by sexual activity. This condition is found in women in the reproductive age group, especially those who have had multiple children, but is not found in menopausal women. Since you aren't in the age group and don't have symptoms, you clearly don't have pelvic congestion syndrome. Dilated veins in the legs are simply called varicose veins, and they are often due to loss in function of the valves in our legs as we age. Pelvic vein enlargement is the same thing. Veins get bigger as we age. There are cases of blood clots in the pelvic veins, but it is not clear whether a person like you is at increased risk. I don't see the need to repeat the imaging studies.
Dear Abby, expat gets the cold shoulder from French natives. Dear Abby, I went to college in France. It was my lifelong dream to move here and start my own life in this beautiful country. I succeeded. I married and had a child, but the marriage didn't work out. My son, who is now 8, has spent his whole life here. He fits in. He is popular. However, as a single working mother in a foreign land, I do not. I have mastered the French language. I can have an intellectual conversation in French, and I even make jokes in French. I understand it's a different culture. I have had many different roles as a bilingual assistant in various sectors, such as real estate, digital transformation, architecture, and interior design. I count myself blessed to always be able to find work, but the women here just don't like me. I am blonde and wear makeup, and my presence seems to threaten and anger them no matter where I go. There are always one or two nice colleagues, but there is also a mass vibe of hostility. I can't leave because I can't take my son away from his father. Advice? Left out in Paris. Dear Left Out, please allow me to offer my sympathy. What you are experiencing is hurtful, but it happens everywhere, not just in Paris. You wrote that wherever you are working, there are always one or two nice colleagues. Concentrate on them and the work you were assigned to do, and although it may not be easy, ignore the rudeness of the others. You are not there to socialize. Because you feel iced out socially, try to connect with other expatriates who are probably feeling the way you do. It's more productive than licking your wounds alone. At some point, your son will be old enough to be on his own, and you may be able to relocate to a part of France or Europe where the people are warm and welcoming. Keep your contacts close back home, because you may be able to relocate to the States if you wish. In the meantime, stay occupied. If you do, it will give you less time to be depressed. Dear Abby, when attending a wedding, do you think it's rude for the guests to post photos of the bride and groom on social media announcing the new couple before the couple have a chance to post? It would be like someone else announcing the birth of your baby. I think the couple should be the first to post any photos of themselves and announce their marriage. What do you think? Proper in California. Dear Proper, I think you're correct. However, so many people post about the activities in which they participate. It isn't surprising that guests would enthusiastically share their joy by putting these pictures online. If the bride and groom want to keep it from happening, they should specify that they want no photos taken during the wedding or the reception, and then cross their fingers. Guests who plan to take pictures should be sure to ask the couple before posting them.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.